The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says the death toll from the Ebola virus has risen to more than 4,400 people, while the number of reported cases has climbed nearly 9,000. Since it was first reported in the forest region of Guinea in March, Ebola has crossed into Liberia and Sierra Leone and has triggered smaller outbreaks and cases in Nigeria and Senegal. As governments from the United States to China and Cuba send troops and medics to the affected corner of Africa in an attempt to contain the epidemic, while relief agencies are scrambling to ward off the humanitarian crisis, threatening hundreds of thousands along with the health disaster. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, is one of the organizations on the ground to help contain the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Joining us via phone from Monrovia, Liberia, is Sheldon Yet, UNICEF representative in Liberia. Sheldon Yet, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you on the show. And let me remind our listeners, if you would like to participate in the show with your question or comment, you can please call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1 and ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or send them via facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will discuss at the issue of Ebola in West Africa and what is being done to tackle it in a moment. But first, VOA's Jody Kapwa has this report.
The World Health Organization says the number of cases in the West Africa Ebola outbreak will top 9,000 this week. The official death toll stands at nearly 4,450, but it's believed to be a conservative figure. The WHO gave an update Tuesday on the Ebola crisis. The briefing was led by Dr. Bruce Alward, WHO Assistant Director General in charge of the operational response to the Ebola outbreak. He says 95% of the cases are reported in 19 of the 67 districts, counties, or prefectures in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, a figure that's held fairly steady for the past month.
If we look at the reported number of cases over the last 4 weeks, and we take seven-day blocks for which we have full data, it's been running about 1,000 cases a week now for about 3 to 4 weeks. A couple of people have looked at that and said, well, what's going on? Is the epidemic slowing down, or are we not seeing the exponential growth? And quite frankly, it's too early to say, because as most of you know, the numbers go up and down. The labs sometimes can't keep up with the amount of specimens they're getting.
Another reason is health officials may be overwhelmed by the paperwork involved in tracking the epidemic. Dr. Alward says there are some positive trends.
One is a slowing down in the rate of new cases in some areas in what's been the historic epicenter, Lofa County, Liberia. In both Kenema and Kalahun, it's been slowing down over the last couple of weeks as well. Now, as some of you also know, though, in Gekedu, right across the border, we've seen the disease go up and down as well. But as we talk to our teams on the ground there and teams from other organizations, there's a lot of information that suggests that this is the result of real change in the behavior or the approach of communities most often.
That behavior change includes a large increase in the number of safe burials. However, the WHO official has a warning for those who may say there are now just a few cases in those areas.
Well, that's like saying you're only a little bit pregnant, you know. This is Ebola. This is a horrible, unforgiving disease. You've got to get to zero.
To stop Ebola, he says, you need thorough tracing of those who may have been in contact with Ebola victims. Same-day isolation, among other things. Alward says, after visiting the region recently, he also saw some disturbing trends. One is that the disease is expanding geographically.
Looking at a map where they're coming up, because they're on the border areas as well, with Cote d'Ivoire in particular. We're seeing some additional areas reporting cases that we hadn't. So that's concerning, just that geographic expansion.
Alwood says every district in the three worst affected countries must have full control over burials, case management, and behavior change. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Again, Sheldon Yet, a representative for UNICEF in Liberia, is joining us today for our discussion. So you heard, Mr. Yet, this report. WHO is warning that this outbreak may continue to increase. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's very clear that the cases continue to increase in Liberia and in other places as well. We're by no means around the corner on this one yet. We're making some progress in certain areas, but we have a lot of work before us, no doubt about that.
And Liberia is the most affected country, at least according to report. You are on the ground there. What is your observation?
Well, work is moving forward. We got to have more and more partners coming here every day, and that's good news, but we still don't have enough. We still need more foreign medical teams to join us here. We still need more skilled workers to come. We've got to get Ebola treatment units built and, most importantly, fully staffed. It's no good just having buildings here if you don't have the trained medical personnel to run them and to provide the treatment that is required. And unfortunately, we're still hearing every day of health workers that are getting sick and new Ebola patients in every corner of the country. So, again, as I said, we still have a lot more work to do. But we are seeing some signs of progress.
Some signs of progress, yet more and more health workers are getting sick. It's very troubling, I have to say, because those who are supposed to be taking care of those who are sick are also vulnerable. So what can you tell us about this trend where we see so many health workers getting sick, which we have not really seen before in past outbreaks, with Ebola at least?
Yeah, I think it's really important to emphasize that the health workers on the front lines here are the real heroes. They are providing support to those people who are most vulnerable, and they're still falling ill despite the best measures made to keep them safe. It is essential that health workers are provided with all the kits they need to keep themselves safe, and that they themselves strictly follow the protocols that are in place and provide only treatment in designated places and in designated manners.
And providing kits and necessary supply is what UNICEF has been doing, among other things. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. We've, as UNICEF, have brought in over 500 metric tons of supplies. That's a huge amount, 500,000 pounds of supplies, of everything from chlorine to basic medical supplies to drugs, through all the supplies that are necessary to keep our health centers up and running. They're here. They're being distributed around the country. We're also providing water and sanitation to Ebola treatment units here. We've got teams going door-to-door across the country, making sure people understand what they need to do to keep themselves safe and to ensure that they themselves get the disease. So we've got people working on making sure that behaviors change and making sure that supplies are in the right places, the right times, and make sure that people have the skills necessary to provide the services that are required.
So we see a lot of coverage in the media about this outbreak. We see that at least there is a sense that the international community is responding now. However, some people feel like the international community is still behind the curve on this, despite all the talks and the coverage and everything. Now, you're working for an NGO such as UNICEF. What can you say about the response?
You know, it's interesting. I see media reports in the United States and all the hysteria that we have in the U.S. and in other places about this. But the reality is, if we're going to get ahead of the curve on this, we need far more support here on the ground, on the epicenter in West Africa. We need more trained medical people here. We need more funds here. We need more supplies here. It's a terrible disease that keeps making worse and worse damage on the country, kills more and more people, and leaves victims, children, adults in their wake every day. There are also, of course, the people who survive and then have to face the issues of being reintegrated in their community. There's a real issue of stigma associated with Ebola here. This is something we haven't really seen before. We're seeing this with children who are survivors and then have problems becoming finding new families and finding new communities to go to. The devastation of this reaches every corner of society and every element of life here.
And you mentioned children. I really wanted us to talk a little more about children, and we'll do that a little bit later, given that UNICEF, one of the focuses of UNICEF is children. And I know that you have a program like a transition center that you have established, if I'm not mistaken. But let's talk about you said this is what we need supply, we need trained medical personnel. I knew I was speaking to one of the supervisors of MSF, who is in charge overseeing overseeing human resources, and he was talking about the challenges of getting people to volunteer. In some cases, perhaps it has improved, because I talked to him about a month ago, but how much of a challenge has it been for us, an organization like yours, or even from what you hear on the ground? How much of a challenge has it been to get people to volunteer to come on the ground and work?
You know, it's still a challenge. It's getting better, but we still have tremendous gaps in the skills that are required to serve here. We've had some great offers of support, and they're being integrated and being trained as we speak. But it takes time, too. It takes time to get people fully trained and into the centers. So there's still a huge human resources gap here. And that's much more difficult to fill than just building buildings here and getting Ebola treatment units up and running. Yeah. Yes, it's wonderful that we have this accelerated building program, but we need the staff to fill them.
Yes, and you mentioned stigma, which is something that was really it was a little bit unpredictable, because when you think about how terrible this disease is and people will recover, you would think that the family, the friends, their neighbor will embrace them. But this issue of stigma is a reality, as we've seen with HIV/AIDS. So how does this translate?
Yes, and you and I know that people who have survived can't get sick again from Ebola and are very safe. They pose no danger to their communities. But people see children who have survived as harbingers of ill fortune, as people who will bring more problems to a community. So we hear every day stories of rejection of kids who can't go home. I want to emphasize, however, that the vast majority of families here, the vast majority of Liberians, are extremely welcoming and are doing everything they can. But we still do have these pockets of stigma that we need to address.
Mm-hmm. Very, very, very much so. And now, what about the fact that do you come across some misconception? Of course, we talk about, I am an African, and some of the things that I've heard are very familiar when, people talk about witchcraft and things of that nature. What are some of the misconceptions that perhaps UNICEF has to deal with on a daily basis or on occasion?
Well, of course, you've mentioned one of them. People think it's witchcraft. People think it's a made-up problem that's been made up so the government can get resources, which we know is not the case. People see it as a result of sin, and you can choose what kind of sin it's the result of. All of these, of course, are wrong and are misconceptions. We know exactly how it's transmitted. We know it's a virus, and we know what it is, and we know how to keep people safe. But unfortunately, people are all too ready to believe other things, and we still are battling these misperceptions throughout the country.
So then the awareness messages that are being conveyed, at least by UNICEF, or even in general, or should be conveyed, what do you think there should be, or what are they?
Well, I mean, we know what they are. We know that one of the ways that the virus is transmitted is through burials, through unsafe burials or funeral practices. We know that if you touch the body, you're likely to get sick, mm-hmm. and that has to change. We know as well that good hygiene can go a long way for keeping safe. It's important that people wash their hands regularly, all the time. And you've seen in around Monrovia, every street corner has a stand where people can wash their hands. You can't go into any hotel or any restaurant or any shop without washing your hands. So these are good things. But it's important that these practices are maintained. And it's important also that these practices are maintained in all communities, not just in capital city, mm-hmm. but in all corners of the country. And this is really essential.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, we are discussing tackling Ebola in West Africa. And our guest today is Sheldon Yett, UNICEF representative in Liberia. We are going to take a short break and listen to this report. And when we continue, we will have our guest to enlighten us further on the issue, as is on the ground in Liberia. And VOA's Bina Mushta has this report from Liberia.
A woman died. Her brother is heartbroken. A local burial team is getting ready to remove the body from the village in the Robertsfield community near Liberia's international airport. Emmanuel N.B. Flomo, the man with a little camera, is the head of the team. Removing dead bodies infected with Ebola is a risky job. You can't move quickly in a suit like these men are wearing. The gear needs to be covered and later disinfected, like everything else around here. The undertakers start with a hearse and then take on the woman's house.
We have to disinfect everything that we are mistakenly get in contact with him because he's not supposed to touch anything in there.
So, but I mean, it's crazy, like all the people, like the guys like around us, like they have no protection at all.
It's the problem that we got in Liberia. Uh-huh. Most people are not believing that the virus is real.
The young woman lived in this tiny hut with just a bed, some cooking pots, some firewood. She lies on a mattress on the floor and is covered by clothes.
Now he's disinfecting the body. And it's my understanding that she's a baby mother and the child is just 3 months old. So I don't know if the family will still be refusing for them to take the baby too for treatment because I learned a child who is not eating right now.
After disinfecting the body, the undertakers are preparing themselves to put the body into the body bag.
And this point is the risky part. So it's only advisable to touch the body one time. And that is by taking the body from the ground straight into the body bag. That's the only type of gas that want to get in contact with the body. The infection around this body, I would say, is 100%.
While the men are disinfecting themselves, the father shouts at them. The husband can only watch how the undertakers are carrying his dead wife away. The burial team takes the body to a nearby village. The undertakers bury the body far into the bush. After more than 200 burials since the Ebola outbreak in their area, none of the team has gotten sick. But their job not only comes with a health risk, it's also an emotional strain. Out of respect for the dead woman and her family, they don't want me to film how they have to put the body into the ground. The men say they are not scared, they need to do it, because if they didn't, more of their people would get infected and die. Benno Müchler, VOA News, Margibi County, Liberia.
A daunting task to be an undertaker in this Ebola crisis, and even medical health workers, we've seen how much they've been affected. Now, let's talk about the fact that, you know, we heard that health centers are being built, and you said it so clearly, we need trained personnel to run these centers. It's not just about having the centers there and, just looking beautiful and well-equipped. Now, if someone does not have the possibility to reach the health center, what can they do in their neighborhood, in their houses, in their home to ensure that they stay as safe as possible in case someone in their house has been affected?
Well, I think the most important thing that people do is that they call the hotline, they call the numbers or designated numbers in Liberia to call, and they inform a medical professional. It's very, very dangerous for people to care for people directly on this. So if you have any suspicion at all, you have to call the hotline. and then allow them to provide advice, allow them, find a designated room for the individual, but don't try to provide care yourself. I think this is really the most important message that anyone should take home.
And the everyday steps for sanitation that people are taking, we've seen people washing their hands, the use of chlorine. Somehow, it seems like some people think if they have hand sanitizer and they're washing their hands, they are safe. Isn't that also a little bit counterproductive? They don't really pay attention.
Well, absolutely. I mean, yes, you have to wash your hands, but you have to pay attention too. Touching a dead body and then washing your hands is probably not the best way to go forward. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's much better and it's extremely essential that you don't touch the body in the first place. So, of course, it can give one a false sense of security. But it can also it's also important to keep in mind that it's also a basic measure that everyone needs to be taking here. It just becomes a fact of life here. You need to wash your hands many times a day. It's one of the important ways of staying safe.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the children now. We've seen so many children being orphaned by this outbreak. What is happening to them? What is UNICEF doing?
A number of things to keep in mind. Yes, children are being orphaned. And they need to be reintegrated into families. I think that's the most important thing. The last thing we want to see is children in institutions. Children belong in families. They don't belong in buildings. So it's very important that we can find families and they can be these families and be brought up that way. They also need psychosocial support, of course. I mean, imagine what it's like if you're a child. If you see your guys in white spacesuits spraying down your community, perhaps taking away people that you know, it's extremely, extremely traumatic. So we also need to ensure we can provide care for people and support for children like this. We're working with the government now to ensure that there are hundreds of social workers and mental health specialists who are trained and are able to provide these services. So this is very, very important. I think the legacy of Ebola will be with us long after we have control of this particular outbreak.
Very, very important what you just said. The legacy of Ebola will stay with us for a long time. What do you see as the legacy of Ebola?
Well, hopefully it will lead to some behavior change. That's very important. Of course, washing your hands keeps away not just Ebola, but other diarrheal diseases as well. And that's a good thing. So we hope there'll be some permanent behavior change. We hope there's better consciousness of this, and we hope some of the practices that lead to the spread of the disease change. We hope that will happen. But this will take time, and I think we have to recognize this.
Now, when we look at the way forward, a lot of money is needed, a lot of supply, a lot of personnel. In terms of funding, not to get an exact number or anything, but what are we looking at? It's millions of dollars, billions of dollars? How much funding does it involve, at least with UNICEF, specifically for Ebola?
Well, here in Liberia, UNICEF projects our needs are about $64 million. But that's just for UNICEF. And, of course, the needs are much greater if you look at the entire sphere of activity. And unfortunately, funds have been very slow to come in. I've been in many, many different emergencies all around the world, and I'm a little surprised why money isn't coming in as fast as it has in other emergencies. And, of course, we need the resources to respond appropriately. We need resources to get kids back into school. We need the resources to ensure kids get the support they require, and to ensure that Ebola treatment units have water and the kids have the nutrition they require. All these things take funds, and that's essential.
And where should the fund come from? Should we look for new sources of funding in a case like this, or do the usual funders, if I could say that, do they need to just step up their efforts?
Well, I mean, funding for something like this, it's in everybody's interest, of course, to ensure that this virus doesn't continue to spread and to ensure that we get this under control as quickly as possible. But it's also important not to rob Peter to serve Paul. It's very important that we don't hijack resources that are needed for other development issues to serve Ebola. We need to make sure that it isn't at the expense of other needs.
Mm-hmm. And so then when you see from WHO projections are clear that this may take more time, more patient, more people will be affected before there is an end to this. But ideally, the way things are being handled now, the response, when you look at the response on the ground, what is your projection, if you could project, in terms of being able to contain this?
I've learned over the years not to be a gambling man, so I'm not going to give you an exact month or an exact date, but I know we're doing the right thing. We are slowly getting control of this. It's still a lot more work to do, but I'm optimistic that we will race ahead and that we will break this outbreak.
What is the response, the type of work, the collaboration that you have with the local government?
Well, I think we need to be clear. The government is in charge. The government is calling the shots. They need to be. They have the full accountability here. We have a very collaborative relationship, a very open relationship, and we're working to support them to ensure that their operational plan can be executed here. They have to be out in front, and they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about the population in general? How are they responding to even the messages that are being spread out there? You talked about behavioral change as one of the legacies of Ebola, hoping that this will be. Do you see at least some types of steps toward this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think early on there was a lot more denial than there is now. Unfortunately, there isn't a segment of society that doesn't know an individual who has died from this disease. Mm. That's made it all too real. So the denial that we saw early on is not as widespread as it once was. Yes, there are corners of the country. Yes, there are neighborhoods. Yes, there are individuals who still believe it's caused by something else. But I think people understand that Ebola is here and that it is real. Behavioral change is more difficult, though. It's one thing to understand it, another thing to change behavior. And we've learned that humans are complex individuals, and it doesn't matter what country you're in or what segment of society you're in. People often know things are bad for them, but still continue to do it. And that's, we understand that takes time, but it's essential that behaviors that are contributing to the spread of this disease do change.
So in a general sense, how is the Ebola outbreak affecting the work of UNICEF as a whole? I think we can imagine that it is taking a toll, but can you just give us a sense of how it is?
Well, frankly, UNICEF's work in Liberia right now is about Ebola. All our resources, all our activities, all our staff, in one way or the other, are working to combat this disease. Because, as I said, it affects every corner of a child's life. Schools are closed right now. We need to make sure that schools are equipped so schools can reopen as soon as possible. We need to ensure that health centers are open. Unfortunately, if you have malaria, you have other diseases that are endemic here, there are very few services that are available. So we need to ensure that those services are up and running. There isn't anything that UNICEF does that is not related to Ebola right now in the current context of Liberia.
Okay, Sheldon Yeh, thank you so much for joining us today and enlightening us on your work.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. Sheldon Yeh, who was joining us from Liberia, Monrovia, he's a UNICEF representative in Liberia. Thanks to all of you for tuning in, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. Don't forget to keep the conversation going on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.